buddy, buddy, buddy. This is the news, according to me. Welcome aboard once again on this fine Monday afternoon. Top of the week, I guess. This isn't really the top of the week. Top of the week was this morning's show. If you missed this morning's show, by the way, too bad for you. One of the best shows ever that was ever done on a Monday morning on this year, this month, this week. I had some things I wanted to talk about, and I mentioned this morning in this morning's show, and you know, basically, one of the things I wanted to mention was by the way, I'm in my car, again, in the mobile unit. This is the mobile news, according to me. And one day, I will explain what it is I do, why I drive around in my car and sit in my car and do these shows. Because it's a fascinating story. It's a story of adventure. A story of happiness. It's a story of vagabonds living like gypsies. It's a feel-good story. Now I've got a couple things jotted down here that I jotted down. Not sure how that goes. One of the things that, I'm going to get into this a little bit, keep an eye on the voting stuff still going on. One of the things that, has been very surprising to me is how Kemp down in Georgia. Now, I think the problem here, I think what we have here is, of course, now they're attacking Kemp and saying that his rules are racist. And this is the guy that they thought was the hero of this last election because he certified the election and pushed it forward and didn't back down. Oh, the results are, they're done, they're final. Listen to the, you know, this guy's a Republican. He's one of the good Republicans. Now all of a sudden he's the enemy of the state. He's the enemy of the country. He's the enemy of, because he's a racist. Because this new bill that has been signed is a racist bill. Now, whenever you see the left, when you ever see their heads starting to pop off and they start getting violent and squirming and complaining, you can bet that probably what's happening is things that they were getting away with, they're not going to be able to get away with again any longer. Which tends to drive them bat crazy. That's what's happened. In fact, one lady during the signing ceremony, I guess during the official signing of the bill, tried to break in. I think it was Kemp's office or the Secretary of State's office. I'm not sure which. Now, of course, they're all concerned about how the elections are going to go next time because I think they're up for election. They may have been up for election last time. I'm not sure about that. A lot of things being changed now in the state of Georgia with these new laws, and some other states are putting some laws forth as well. One of the things that their main thing they're doing is voter ID and the way they verify the voters themselves. It's important to understand how that affects things. As well as how the left sees that, they complain about, well, you're disenfranchising people, and that's not the case. Let's not even go there. But it's an amazing thing to me that how you can pretty much bet that anytime the left's heads pop off and they start screaming racist, you can pretty much assume that they're getting something, one of their little projects are getting taken away from them. And that's exactly what's happening there. They know what's going on. They know what they're doing. I also have the feeling that the SEIU will probably not be part of the vote counting system again, which will throw a monkey wrench into things. This of course comes in some pressure that is being put on by the Trump group. I don't know what they're calling themselves right now. They are pushing to oust people who were not friendly to the administration. Now, of course, this is all. That's because he's a fascist. He's a totalitarian. Whatever. That's not the case. What we're seeing right now in office is more fascism than I've ever. Of course, they're not calling it that. Whenever you see the media start to curl up next to a particular side, a particular candidate, or a particular party, it becomes very dangerous. This is what happened during the, and I don't mean to bring up Hitler, the Third Reich stuff, but that is exactly what they did. Any totalitarian, keep in mind, Hitler was elected and ushered in, there were three main parties in Germany, if memory serves me correctly, which it probably doesn't. And they had, they got in with like a third of the vote, or a little more than a third of the vote. It was less than half the vote that they won election in. And so they do this kind of stuff, and they were elected in, and then they gradually just became, totalitarian type thing. Well, I would call it totalitarian. Now, Mussolini was more of a dictator style individual. Of course, the emperor was put there by his blood, because he inherited that position. That's the kind of stuff that happens. But it becomes an oligarchy. Regardless of where you are, there's a ruling class. Even what we have going on today, Trump was not a part of the ruling class. He didn't come up through the ranks the way most people do. Didn't attend the right schools. Didn't attend the right things. They have to wean those people out because they have to have control of them. And one of the ways that they control them is I've said before, is through the FBI, through the Alphabet Soup organizations. Not necessarily at the top or at the bottom of the organization. The FBI is kind of a. It has its working class, I'll say. Of course, not everybody wants to move up the ladder there. Not everybody, but most people there want to move up the ladder. There are individuals who get frustrated because of the corruption that's there. If you know anything about the, I believe it was between, it was right around the, I think it was right around 2002, 2003, something like that. And I'm pretty sure that it was, I wish I could remember the guy's name. I saw a movie about it recently. It was very good, but it kind of brought up some of the corruption that was going on. And this particular FBI agent saw the corruption that was there, saw the way people were being promoted, and saw the underhandedness that was going on. And he was an incredibly brilliant individual who was upset with the system, and he was so frustrated and mad with the corruption that was there that he actually started selling secrets to foreign actors. I believe the Russians, I think, is where he was mostly selling a lot of his information. Could have been China, but I think it was mostly Russia. So he was acting as kind of he was a spy. And he ended up getting caught. I believe he's still in prison to this day. I don't know if he's died, passed away or not yet, but which is also interesting because we used to execute people who were spies, people who gave away secrets. I mean, we're talking serious classified information was given away to the, well, sold, wasn't given away, was sold to the Russians. And there was a time when we would execute those people. It's not that way apparently now. It may be that way actually still. However, the process of going through the trial to execute him probably would have brought up more dirt on the FBI. And you have to understand, there's so much of what the FBI does at the top is very politically, I don't want to say motivated. I guess motivated is the right word. It definitely has an agenda. And they, for instance, the FBI, and I believe even local law enforcement, but I think the FBI knew about this guy who was the shooter out in Colorado recently for the big mass shooting thing that they had going on. It would seem that if it would have been me who had done the things that this guy had done in the past, I'd be sitting in prison already. This guy was not. And it is almost as if they play these guys. I mean, I can't say this is what they do. But the FBI seems to enjoy gathering information to use to politically either manipulate people who get into politics or particular, they get all the dirt on everybody. And then they use that dirt to control and manipulate and keep people in line and to walk their line. I'm not just saying it's just the FBI, because there's other organizations that I believe do it too. When you get an individual into office, such as a Trump, who doesn't care, he's pretty much lived his life in the public view. He's lived his life in a fishbowl all of his life. And he knows, you know, everybody knows what the guy's like. They know what he did with his, you know, how he treated it, or, you know, the philandering and everything else he's done. They know all about that. So when they elected him, there was really nothing, you know, any dirt that could be fabricated on the guy or even anything that could be brought up, really, it was like Teflon, because it just didn't matter. You know, after the left has told us, you know, after gone through the Bill Clinton thing era, and it wasn't just the blue dress, folks. Everybody forgets about the fact that he had an affair for 12 years with Jennifer Flowers. Not only did he take advantage of an intern in the Oval Office, but he also, and she wasn't, folks, come on. If you think she was the only one, there was a pattern there with old Billy. And it's not only was Jennifer Flowers someone he messed around with for 12 years. She was one of the ones who came out and talked about it. But there were also others. And there were also others who came out and very credibly admitted that he did things not so nice, things that you go to jail for today. And of course, he didn't. He'd go to jail for back then as well, but he didn't do that. Didn't happen to him. So I think that after people saw that, there was a certain segment of the population that were like, don't tell us you got some kind of high morals here, that you're all of a sudden now the left is all of a sudden the standard bearer of morality and goodness. Now keep in mind, a lot of the things that Trump said, it was that he said on tape, he was recorded saying some things that he didn't say he did it. He did the things. He may very well have. He did not say in the recording that he had done those things. He just talked about what you can do when you're a popular individual. what you can get away with. Now, that being said, it was an awful lot of popular individuals who came out and started calling him a pig and saying he did this and he's going to do all that. We have seen on record, I can pull up videos right now, of a certain individual touching children very inappropriately, and children actually being very uncomfortable with the way he's touching them, you can tell. Let alone all the other accusations and pretty credible witnesses that have come forward about our current White House individual. But nobody calls him a pig. He's a fine, upstanding, moral, fatherly figure. So, all of a sudden, we got this, you know, perfect guy in the White House now. He's like the Pope, which I'm not going to go there. That's, let's move on. He's like a Billy Graham. Let's put it that way. You know, he's like our nation's father. Just pure as the driven snow. Yeah. And that's the thing I think the thing people are just tired of is this phony sense of morality that is not, it's not there. And it just gets frustrating to hear it even being talked about. What's going on with that? But that's the gist of what's going on with the voting stuff. Just keep an eye on what's going on in Arizona. Keep an eye on what's going on right now in Michigan. There's still some pushback. There's still individuals who are not letting things go by, especially with what happened with the Secretary of State there and that kind of thing. And Attorney General, Michigan State Attorney General. Some of that stuff's not going away. Now, you've also got issues with the Cuomo thing that's happening right now. It's kind of taken aback. It's kind of blown over right now. They know that it will eventually get out of the news cycle. Now, of course, this is the third type of thing that's happened to him now. Now what they're finding out is he gave a bunch of people close to him, his close family and close friends and relatives, gave them COVID shots, made sure that they got access to COVID vaccinations early on, you know, prior to anybody else. Gave them priority in line, basically. That's now the big scandal now, too. Now, they've come out, actually, and said that they... it's not a big deal. You know, a few hundred shots to give priority, a few hundred vaccinations, not a big deal. That's okay. Now, keep in mind, if Trump had done this, they would have crucified him. This is something they would have impeached him in a heartbeat over. Anything they could, in fact, if he just, you know, smiled or ate it, you know, if he just dribbled something out of his, you know, if he was eating a cheeseburger and somehow dripped grease on his chin, they would have impeached him for that. And probably got it through the House. I mean, they were ready to impeach this guy day one. And just the ridiculousness of where they were going with all this. It was just, you know, they would fabricate anything that they could. So just don't forget that the standards by which we are being measured, those of us on the right, and the standards that are, you know, thrust upon us from the pure and the righteousness of the left is getting a little bit thick, I'd say. Let's just put it that way. So now, along with that, that's the FBI thing. You know, they knew of the shooter. They knew what was going on out in Colorado. And again, I hear story after story after story of this kind of thing. There are several movies out that are based on true stories. Some of them are about the FBI. not only is it the FBI, but also apparently now the Secret Service is a little bit involved in some of this stuff. I don't understand, and I'm not sure exactly the structure of the Secret Service. My understanding is they are very similar to the way the FBI is set up. The Secret Service does not do investigations. The Secret Service is more of a, as I understand it, they are more of a patrol, protection, intelligence gathering. I'm not sure if they even really do that much intelligence gathering. They're more of a kind of like the security guard kind of job. When there is a crime done, you don't see the Secret Service taking anyone, you know, arresting anyone necessarily. Usually they will detain people, and then the FBI. It's usually any kind of case that the Secret Service is involved in is typically passed off to the FBI. So there's that, because they're the law enforcement organization. Secret Service is a little different, and that's just my understanding. I could be way off on that. I've never really done much research on them. Maybe I need to look into that a little bit more. It seems like it was Hoover that started the Secret Service. That was the CIA. I don't know. I think they were all kind of started kind of in that same realm, that same era, early 1900s and possibly mid 1900s. That's when it really became this thing. Now, the Hunter Biden story, the latest thing on that whole thing is that they have found. Now, if you look at some of the things, some of the interactions that Joe and Hunter had with the FBI and Secret Service, there's some very interesting things going on there. A lot of the emails, a lot of the text messages that are on his laptop. There, and by the way, there were two laptops. The second one was the one that we have most of the information on. The first one is a little bit ambiguous. Nobody's sure exactly where that ended up, but my guess is the FBI has that one as well. The way the FBI treated the individual at the store when they went to pick up his laptop was dang near criminal, mafia-style thing. Basically, the way they talked to the guy. Scared him to death. Scared him to the point where he took the copy he had made and made other copies and gave them out to several different individuals, stating, you know, if something happens to me, here's the copy. Now, there is one guy that's got a copy who's gone through a lot of it. He's still ciphering through a lot of it because there are tens of thousands of emails, hours and hours of video, all kinds of information on this thing. And it's a very, very... It's just a whole lot of crap on there, any of it, almost, you know, at least a third of it is stuff that would put any one of us in jail right now. But he's of course elevated to the point. You know, this kid's walking around in the White House. He has access to his dad anytime he wants, basically. Pretty amazing, really. You think about it, the kind of access that he has. And of course, now we're back to all of a sudden, China's not a problem. China's not the problem anymore. China's not a problem. Russia's the problem. China's not the problem. And yet they're rattling their sabers. We are teetering on some very touchy situations right now with, and you've got, North Korea, as well, is now very emboldened. They're not even returning calls. The North Koreans are ignoring the administration, and they're saying that they're a huge threat now. And of course, they were all concerned about. Now, this is what concerns me about the left right now. Anytime they start talking about something and putting something off on someone else, that they are probably doing it themselves, or they're the ones we really need to be worried about. One of the things that they continued to say they were all upset about and worried about was the fact that Trump had his finger on the nuclear codes. If they're concerned about him having them, then I'm concerned about them having them. I'm more concerned about the current administration, whoever's in charge there.
They will do anything.
And when I say the end justifies the means, I mean anything. They would get us into a nuclear war to assure themselves of the totalitarian takeover, power grab that they are interested in doing with this country. And we are teetering on the edge. There's actually some previous individuals now that were heads of state and that kind of thing before. They're saying this new, the newest legislation, the $3 trillion deal, $3 trillion bill that's out, that they're going to be pushing through the House now and trying to get through the Senate. That deal would basically put us into a position of being a socialist nation because of the kind of controls. Now, realize socialism or communism, if you want to call it that, which is really where we're, that's really the same thing. They're hand in hand, the same thing. Is where they control, you know, absolute socialism is and communism is where they have the means to control. They have control of the means of production, meaning that they can, if you want to start a business, you have to apply for a permit to start that business. They give you permission, which, tell me how far this is from where we are right now. If you want to start a business, you have to have permission, you have to file paperwork, or they will just, they will tell you what kind of business you can do and how much business you can do. Recently watched a little documentary on food. The History Channel had a little, over the weekend, they had a little thing about food industry, and some of the wars that have gone on between like McDonald's and Burger King and those kinds of things. I have a new respect now for Burger King. I might just have to start eating at Burger King more often. This guy started out, now I have a lot of respect for Ray Kroc, and I think that he had a come to Jesus moment at some point. Because he has gotten involved with the Salvation Army and he's become very big on giving. And not just giving to just any organization, but the Salvation Army is one of his major charities that he gives to. And he's done a lot of things. Now, you have to realize this guy's made billions of dollars. For him to sit down and plop down $400 million, or $40 million for a, you know, a Kroc Center or whatever he's going to do is not, that's like me giving you a quarter. So he, well, maybe a dollar. Be like, that would hurt. A quarter wouldn't hurt. A dollar is probably more like it. Because of the riches that I have, a quarter would be, that would, you know, I have to be proportional here. Let's say it would be like you giving someone a quarter because, you know, you're probably poor. Much poorer than I am, because I'm in the top, you know, 90%. I'm in the top 90%. Not the top 1%. I'm in the top 90%. You're probably in the top, you know, 80%. I don't know. So, I'm not sure if I'm doing the math right on that. You could correct me. Call me. Text me. Let me know. And so these people who have this, anyway, this whole thing of this is an interesting situation because it really represents, in a sense, it represents what happens under communism. Burger King, these two guys that started Burger King, and they were really competing with McDonald's, and they came out with the Whopper, home of the Whopper. Well, McDonald's didn't have the Big Mac yet, and they were very taken back by what had just happened. Ray Kroc, who was the head of the show, apparently was kind of a ruthless individual at one time. And he was taken back by this whole thing. He was mad. Word has it that he ordered a Big Mac, tried it. It was really good. And it made him really mad. He was upset because this was a good burger. And he ended up, way I understand it, it was an all-out effort to drive Burger King off the map. And they came up with they did it right. I was impressed with the way they did it in terms of the way they came up with the Big Mac. They actually put it out to all of their stores and had all of them come up with a way to make this Big Mac thing. And it made really good business sense. the way they came up with this thing. Now, that being said, the name, the Big Mac, by the way, this is a little trivia for you, was actually the I think she was like 20-year-old secretary or something that this guy had. Like, it'd be an administrative assistant today, but it was this gal who was happened to be in the meeting, or the way they portrayed it, it sounded like it happened in this big power meeting that they had between, you know, some of the heads. And I think that it probably didn't happen exactly this way. It was probably a little more organic, but she just came up with this name. Well, you know, call it the Big Mac. And that name stuck. So she was the one who came up with that name. Everybody else was coming up with all these weird names, and Ray Kroc had some names, like the Blue Ribbon Burger and stuff like that. It was ridiculous. So he comes up with all this. They came up with this Big Mac. Now, with that, they were able to stay in the game, and they sold, you know, billions of them. However, Burger King was maxing themselves out in terms of financing and growth, because they were putting everything they were making back into the company. And these guys were basically just fighting tooth and nail to try to expand, grow, get more stores out there. When they would make money, they would invest more money. Now, the franchise market is kind of an interesting market, because people are buying into, you're not really putting up the money for the stores necessarily when you sell a franchise. Now, you can do that. You can internally finance through your company. Some companies do that now. I think McDonald's actually does that now. They actually have their own bank, basically. They will, if you provide the management and the manpower, they will put the store in for you if their demographics, fit the location you want to go into. I think that they do. I'm not sure. I don't think you have to go to a local bank and get local financing. They have their own. Most of the time, you do. But the franchise thing, I think, was kind of new at this time, too. This was back in the 50s and 60s. So Burger King comes out with this thing, and they're growing. All of a sudden, they get a call from Pillsbury. And they were, these guys were living on the edge of, if anything economically would have happened during the time that they were doing this, and things would have gotten tough, like a pandemic, like what we just went through, they probably would have had problems. Maybe not, because a lot of fast food places actually did pretty well in the midst of this pandemic thing, because of people. That was one of the few restaurants you could go to, the drive-thrus. So they sold out. They had this call, and they had this big meeting, and they ended up selling out to Pillsbury. Got rid of all their debt. Now they're on the payroll. They're making good money. Now Pillsbury is covering everything and the expansion and the growth. Problem was, now they find out they lost a lot of control of what they were going to do. Pillsbury was not as interested in being aggressive with regard to expansion. And even if they wanted to, they couldn't make it happen. They couldn't get more expansion going and push themselves out, because Pillsbury was in charge of the purse strings. Pillsbury was seeing the bottom line, and that's all they really cared about, and that's where they went with it. Now, there was a couple other restaurants that they talked about at that time that they said that whenever the accountants get involved, the bean counters get involved, and they see the bottom line. This happened in the coffee industry, actually. The coffee industry, you look at the Kona coffee that comes out of Kona, Hawaii. It's just one of the best coffees in the world. Very high priced coffee. Now Colombia also has some very good coffee. However, they mix the Arabica bean, which is actually the better bean. Most of the like Maxwell House and some of the other coffee companies, they will mix the Arabica bean with the Robusta bean. And the Robusta bean is a much more bitter, grows very easily. It's a cheaper kind of bean. It's kind of a filler type coffee bean. And the Arabica bean has a much better flavor. And so they will cut the Arabica bean with the Robusta bean because it makes it less expensive. to make, so they can sell it cheaper. So they will sacrifice taste for the price if they can be competitive, and it's a very competitive market. Now, what happens is the bean counters get involved and they start doing more and more to cut back so they can make, you know, the bottom line can be bigger, where they actually destroy the customer, because they know the customer is hooked to it anyway. They're going to buy. People will drink, oh, that coffee's not very good, but they'll keep drinking it. I'm not a coffee drinker, so it's not really something for me. I'm kind of that way with tea, though. I'll get a hold of a cup of sweet tea. There have been a few that I've said, you know what, I'm not drinking that. Just wasn't enough. If it's kind of got that moldy kind of taste to it, like it's old, or it wasn't made in a clean, like it had old tea in it or something, I can't drink that. But if it's just like not sweet enough, or if it's just got like a little bit bitter, or if it's got a little too strong on the tea flavor, I'll drink it. Or even if it's watered down, I'll still drink it. However, if it's got that moldy taste to it, I won't drink it. So that's what happens when you get the government taking over. My bumper music's going to kick in here just any minute now. When you get the government taking over and starting to control the means of production, that's just like Pillsbury taking over, and all of a sudden you lose control of your business. You're not calling the shots. They're telling you what you can and can't do. And that's kind of where we're headed, more and more. More government regulation, more government control of what we can and can't do. So keep that in mind as you go through life. Just think about our liberties and how they're being slowly eroded in the name of safety. Well, folks, have a great night. I'm going to try to post this before I head home. I'll be home this evening. I'll be home tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.